From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capitol Notes Podcast for Friday, August 20th. I'm John Myers from KQED. Anthony York, the editor of the now five-year-old Capitol Weekly.
Can you believe it?
Sitting here with me in the studio.
And yet we're still in diapers.
This is your five-year anniversary with that lovely newspaper.
Yes.
The Insider's Guide to Capitol Politics.
That's right.
Did you ever think it would go this far, Anthony? Did you think you'd make it 5 years?
I would hope so, yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. Well, you have a not just a five-year plan, you had a 10-year plan.
That's
or a
right.
longer plan.
We're more forward-seeing than Stalin. What can I say?
And for those of you who haven't nice. And for those of you who haven't seen today's edition of the Capitol Weekly, this week's edition, there's
it's a
flashback
of
photo
us.
On the front that just brought back great memories of a former assembly member who made comments about not kicking the governor out of bed.
Right, right.
Then I believe the governor called her
hot-blooded
Latina. You'll have to check out Capitol Weekly to see it. It was a retro
yes.
photo that I got a chuckle out of.
Well, that's why we put it there, just for you.
It was the only chuckle I got this week. There were very few other chuckles.
Because this is serious business and there's not much to laugh about. Happy Furlough Friday, everybody.
Yes, happy or sad Furlough Friday. You know, it's funny, though. I talked to some of the state workers that are friends of mine who say that they got so used to being off on Fridays and started to value the free time. I probably shouldn't
sure.
be saying this to the governor's office, that, you know, that it's just like almost not as big of a deal now. And again,
right.
I want to be careful. Other state workers are going to call me and say it is a big deal. And I'm just, these are anecdotes of like two people that live near me.
Well, see, we all can't have these public radio schedules where you only have to work 4 days a week and get a full salary. So
is that what I do?
Isn't
that,
I
only work four days a week?
Isn't it?
Man, what am I doing here? And why am I here? See you later.
All right. John Myers has a Stockdale moment. Moving on.
And so let's move on to the doldrums of the summer.
Cue the crickets.
Yes, and our lovely summer budget impasse, which is now into week 8 of the new fiscal year with no spending plan in place. Shall we recount the many happenings or lack thereof on the budget this week?
Well, you know, I think you can sort of sum it up. I woke up Thursday morning to see a blog post from my colleague at the LA Times, Patrick McGreevy, who had a quote from a Schwarzenegger spokesman comparing legislative Democrats to the Bell City Council. And I thought, well, that should set us back a good 2 or 3 weeks.
I thought the same thing. I thought that was an interesting stretch.
Yes.
But anyway, yes, exactly. Yeah. And trying to talk about, any number of things. But go ahead.
Well, look, I mean, this is sort of what it boils down to. This week we had heard these rumblings and rumors of there was some new idea that happened. Apparently all the senior...
A counterproposal.
Right.
Yeah.
Senior budget staff in everybody's office except the speaker's office because the governor doesn't like the speaker, apparently.
So goes the narrative.
Right. But senior staff had been briefed, apparently, about some proposal, and there was, you know, rumors of possibilities of something, although nobody was talking about details. And even those were debunked. So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe your reporting turned up something different. I was unable to
nail
down anything.
It was the great wind up to nothing.
Yes, yes.
It was the great wind up to, wait a minute, we think we're coming up with some ideas, and then we're just, we're still sitting here. So.
And that apparently is progress. I mean, we had a big protest this week from in-home support services, SEIU. Organized a big protest Wednesday at the Capitol.
Which, to be fair, while it may have been organized by SEIU, there were a lot of actually disabled advocates and people who rely on the
right.
services. Now, I guess the only reason I give that caveat is that some of the people were, I don't want to mislead, were quote-unquote real people. I mean, they were people who used the services.
Well, right, but a lot, I mean, people who provide those services are SEIU members, and a
sure.
lot of the people they're providing care for are their own family members. So that's
fair
know,
enough,
right?
But I saw some disabled advocates being arrested, people who were not
right.
union members.
Right.
Well, anyway, they basically stopped the flow of traffic on L Street outside the state capitol.
Yep.
How many? 22 or so arrested, or something like that.
I don't know the final numbers, but,
yeah.
but a couple dozen.
So that made an impact. That got some media attention, and you know certainly.
And then right after that, nothing happened.
Nothing happened. I mean, one of the things that you know, we continue to look for some marker. You know, I mean, the press likes the markers. I think the public would respect a marker as to, you know, What happens on X date if you don't do it? You know, where are we here? Because right. we do this every summer, and we've generally find that the markers are almost impossible to see because, you know, state officials are in charge of the state, and there's really no game plan once you throw out the deadlines. But, you know, we were looking for a marker again this week from the state controller, John Chung, about one of the things that does matter, issuing IOUs if the state runs short on cash. The controller said on Wednesday, 2 to 4 weeks,
right.
and he was pushed about, can't you be more precise, because he was more precise in 2009, like July 1st, I'm going to start issuing them, and that's what happened. He declined to be more precise, said he's watching the cash on a day-to-day basis, and probably the thing out of that stuck with me is that when he was pushed, this was at an event at the Sacramento Press Club, and he was asked by someone, you know, well, you know, why wouldn't you try to offer some leverage in this? I mean, you know, just out of the sake of the good of the public, you know, to offer some leverage for them to get going or to, you know, to say there's a deadline. And he said, well, I did that last year and it didn't work. He
right.
said, I told them for 6 months that we were running out of cash and nothing happened and we were going to run out of cash and I issued IOUs. And
right.
so what's the big deal about me coming up with a date on the calendar?
And, you know, the other interesting deadline in my mind here is not one that not a practical deadline, but a political deadline. I mean, you know, the campaign is really going to start ramping up here in a couple of weeks after Labor Day. And I just wonder how the conflation of a budget stalemate works with a political campaign going on. I mean, there's all sorts of calculations and, you know, people making theories about whether a prolonged standoff helps Meg Whitman or whether it might help for the passage of Proposition 25. And I think that a lot of these other concerns are part of what's feeding this delay. I mean, I really do.
Interesting. I mean, we had a campaign during the longest standoff in state history in 2008. Now, granted, it wasn't the same kind of campaign. It wasn't a gubernatorial race.
Right.
It was a presidential race. I don't know if you can really point to any effects. I mean, maybe someone would argue that the redistricting measure, Prop 11, wouldn't have passed had there not been that delay because
right,
that looked like it was punishing politicians. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of
right.
spinning way out there. But, yeah, I mean, there are a lot more moving parts this year. Gubernatorial
yep.
race, Prop 25, the majority vote budget measure, Prop 26, the two-thirds for fees measure. And
right, and so
those are the top
so
line, and probably other ones too.
Right, and you know, and there are different schools of thought about, you know, how a prolonged budget impasse might impact those elections. So you know, I don't know if this is playing a real role. The other thing, of course, in 2 weeks we have a new leader of the Senate Republican Caucus. So. And we talked a little bit last week about how that may or may not set us back.
And in 2 weeks, we're at the end of the legislative session for
right.
the year. And
right.
the governor would have to call them back in a special session to keep working on a budget deal of
right.
some sort. So,
and then all those bills will be on his desk. And then the other big date looming out there is September 30th. I believe that's the last day the governor has to sign or veto bills. And not that there's any connection between policy bills and the budget, of course. There would be no such horse trading inside the Capitol.
Except for 2008.
What?
Where the governor vetoed a whole slew of bills.
Oh, right, right.
And said, I don't have time to do with these because you took too long on the budget.
Right. And
so veto, veto, veto.
And
veto.
How long before we get there again? I mean, of course, the difference this year is this is the governor's last shot, and there are some bills he really wants. He wants a bill on renewable energy. And there are a couple other things that are, you know, he wants a pension bill. I don't know if that's going to happen, but there's some priorities for the governor. And so we'll see what happens over the next 6 weeks.
And on the first thing you said on the issue of the four-letter word, bell,
yes.
in state politics
did
these
I say
days.
Bell?
Yes, you did.
Oh.
So what the bell? Let's talk about it.
What a ding-dong I was.
Okay, let's stop right
okay.
there before we get any more ridiculous.
No, my ears are ringing. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Okay. Round two.
Then I thought I would join in again. I thought, you know, this is just like the budget debate. You know, people just can't – they keep putting their microphones up and they just don't stop talking.
They can't help themselves.
They can't. So let me try to unring that
bell
portion of the okay. podcast. But anyway, no, what I was going to say is bell, as I've said before, it kind of seems to be the gift that keeps on giving in politics these days. Everybody has jumped on that bandwagon of saying, look, we want to fix this. We saw on Thursday package of bills inspired by the bell fracas from Democrats in the state assembly and state legislature. I think there's a Senate bill as well, so
yeah.
both houses.
Yeah.
designed to increase transparency, to kind of change some of the operations. One of the bills that I found interesting would say that any city that gave a worker a big raise and that worker had worked at another city, then the new city is on the hook for the pension. Because as it stands now, as it finds out, you know, the police chief, for example, in Bell, his big giant pension is going to get paid in part by the other cities he worked in when he was a police chief. So, you know, that's an interesting policy issue to examine there. The transparency stuff, you know, there's important stuff there, but there's politics there as well. There's a little bit of politics with that. But circling back to the pension, the pre-response, not even the response, but the pre-shot to this from the governor's senior advisor, David Crane, in a column he wrote online on a site called Fox and Hounds, said this is grandstanding. And why aren't you, if you really want to do something about what's going on in government, you need to do something about the pension process, which brings us back to the pension thing. And Speaker Perez said today in the press conference when I asked him that, well, we'll do something. You know, we'll have some kind of pension thing. It may not be what the governor wants, right?
Right.
But we'll do something. And that remains to be seen about marking off those things the governor has demanded, pension reform, budget reform, tax reform, and what they would be and whether they meet muster of a governor on his way out the door.
Right, and whether those things happen in through the collective bargaining process or whether there's actual legislation. Now, there will be some, you know, anti-spiking legislation, we think, although it's been amended this week. But
once again, we're waiting on that.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, could you, if you had some new collective bargaining agreements with individual bargaining units mixed with some anti-spiking legislation, could the governor call that pension reform? He probably could. You know, if there is a tax swap, although it's been rejected, but, you know, Daryl Steinberg has very cleverly labeled his plan to lower sales taxes and increase income taxes. He's called that tax reform. Would the governor go for that as tax reform? Well, early indication is not a chance, but again, we'll see. I mean, in the end, I'm sure there will be room to declare victory because that's part of what has – that's part of the glue that keeps a budget together and forges a compromise is that people have to be able to say that they've lived up to the promises they've made, you know, leading up to the agreement.
And yet compromise clashes so much with raw politics. And this gets us to, you know, our transition into our favorite topic of the race for governor. Because I thought about the pension issue when you were talking about that and what would qualify as pension reform and what would the governor be able to say of reform pensions. And then you flip on the governor's race where you've got the candidate from his own party, Meg Whitman, who would go much, much, much further than what the governor is talking about, where she would change all future employees into a defined contribution plan, which is more like a 401k.
Right. And how would she do that again? I forget.
We'll get to that maybe someday. Details pending.
Okay.
I'm sure they'll call us after they hear this. But I guess what I'm saying is, you know, and then you draw the current governor perhaps into that race about whether he can defend that legacy and on and on and on and on.
Right.
So we'll see. It's going to be an interesting, painful few weeks.
Lucky us.
Lucky us.
Don't get jealous.
Exactly. Well, the race for governor, let's talk about quickly. The Republicans are holding a convention this weekend.
Well,
as we speak,
they had the good sense to do it in San Diego. That's the good news.
They did. Now, the bad part is do I get to do anything other than be in the hotel in San Diego?
No.
Not so much. Not staying long enough, you know. I'm on KQED's small dime, half a dime.
Nickel. They call that
nickel.
A nickel.
Thank you. Half a dime, nickel.
Yeah.
You know. See, it's been a long summer, folks.
Okay.
But the convention's in San Diego. Meg Whitman speaking Friday night. Obviously, we've taped this earlier. Carly Fiorina speaking Saturday noontime. You're going, I'm going, but neither one of us for the full ride. What are you looking for?
Not a whole lot. I mean, next
subject.
I think, you know, Whitman gave a brief interview to the LA Times this morning. And she did. You can read about it on the Politico blog Thursday afternoon. So go back in time to yesterday.
I didn't know that. Well, apparently... Yes. It's not Thursday afternoon yet where I am. Go ahead.
Please continue. And she previewed her speech a little bit and said that she's essentially going to focus on Jerry Brown in her speech. And so
shocking.
Well, but I think that this is a good scene setter for the last 8 weeks of this campaign. It's going to get nasty. It's going to get negative. I mean, I think that, you know, Whitman has spent $100 million. She's tried a bunch of positive ads through the summer. They don't seem to have moved her poll numbers. And so now I think that, you know, you look at the union campaign, the pro-Jerry Brown campaign has been very much focused on, it's an anti-Whitman campaign more than it is a pro-Brown campaign. And I think that you're going to see a lot of anti-Brown messaging on, you know, coming out of the Whitman race, out of the Whitman campaign, and that this race will boil down into a referendum on the other guy. I mean, well, I think that's sort of where this is headed.
But, you know, this notion that, so, okay, in the speech she focuses on Jerry Brown. I mean, what else would she talk about? Because she's not going to, you know, she's in the middle of a very careful gymnastics movement here about the party faithful.
Is there a video to go along with this?
No. I don't know. I could like have said a dance. School. I could have said like a puzzle. I don't know.
I'm just thinking, gymnastics. You know, the scene in Old School where Will Ferrell does the rhythmic gymnastics.
No. Oh, yes. That's true. Meg that's Whitman. True. Right.
No.
Or it could have been Back to School where Rodney Dangerfield did the Triple Lindy.
Yes.
But let's
yes,
not go
no,
there.
Let's not.
Please. It's our movie. It's not a movie podcast.
That's more of a budget move than it is convention move.
As I was saying, she's in the middle of a careful...
you said gymnastics.
Gymnastics
routine.
Movement. A careful step. She's in the middle of a careful step about the base and what the base believes in and what moderate and independent voters in the state believe in. She has to have more than Republicans to win this race. She's been dealing with it, you could argue, ineffectively or slightly effectively or something on the immigration issue recently and on global warming, climate change issues. So she's not going to get up and talk about anything like that that might, you know, raise the ire of the party faithful sitting there. She's going to talk about something that they all agree on. We hate Jerry Brown.
She's not going to talk about amnesty?
No, not going to talk about amnesty. Probably not going to talk about Prop 23.
No, apparently not.
No. She's going to talk about something they all can agree on. Jerry Brown shouldn't be governor. And that's perfectly acceptable. I don't reject that as a strategy. But I don't think she's going to be at the convention very long.
No.
I can't imagine we're going to see her beyond Friday night.
Well, and however long she's there, it'll be longer than Steve Poizner or Arnold Schwarzenegger are the only two elected statewide Republican officials. There's Ava Maldonado, who has not been elected but is still lieutenant governor. But neither of the elected statewide Republicans are going to be at the convention. I don't know if that says anything. Maybe they know something we don't. What do you think, John?
Well, the governor has been to very few conventions
right.
in modern times. I feel so old. But in recent times, the governor has not been to very many of those.
These are Poizner's people, though. I mean, he coveted and coddled the Republican base for a long, long time, and now he's not going to be there.
And he's still not endorsed Meg Whitman.
Nope.
In this race.
Exactly.
So therein lies a...
So I'm sure there will be four people in a corner, you know, burning Meg Whitman in effigy, sort of, you know, the right wing of the Republican Party.
And we will all go talk to them.
Yes.
Because that's what our job is.
19 TV cameras.
Right. Right. Three radio microphones and Anthony with his tape recorder.
Right. My blogging pad. My whatever it is.
You know... And then also just quickly in the governor's race too, we saw the debut of an independent expenditure ad on behalf or against Brown, ostensibly on behalf of Whitman.
Right. No. It was an issue ad. It was only informing the public.
Fair enough.
It was not for or against anybody.
Fair enough. That being said, an issue ad that took great concern with Jerry Brown.
Right. There you go.
There we go. I found the proper way to say it. An ad from the Small Business Action Committee headed up by Joel Fox, longtime crusader on tax issues, used to run the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. A lot of discussion about who paid for the ad under the way the laws work, because we're outside of the magic 45 days where independent expenditures don't have to reveal their finances the same way. We don't know who paid for it.
Well, and also, Fox's association, I believe, is a nonprofit, and so we'll never see who gave the money to the nonprofit to fund the ad. So.
Yeah, so there are lots of ways in there.
Right.
So there was a lot of question about that. There was at least one news story that talked about the fact that the Whitman campaign has given money to the Small Business Action Committee at a certain point, though Joel Fox said that wasn't related for a couple of reasons. The timing didn't work out. And anyway, I don't want to get off of my main theme here.
The old she's not really my cousin argument? No.
I don't know. You'll have to ask him about that one. But the ad, while an information ad only, an educational ad,
issue ad,
takes great pains to jab at Brown, I would say. Jabs at his record on spending, jabs his record as governor, jabs on his on a comment he apparently made about 1,100 attorneys ready to sue, which, interestingly enough, I just want to stop on that one for a moment. If you go back, you know how the, you know, folks know this. They look at these ads and they say there's always a media attribution somewhere. You know, it's
was it you?
No, it wasn't me. It wasn't me.
Was but it me?
No, it wasn't okay, you either. Good. But there's always a media attribution. But it's a former employee of yours, and it was written by the Sacramento Bee, Shane Goldmacher, who used to work at the Bee. Now he actually works with you. But here's the context that's missing out of these, and you know, and this is the problem. It's not false. It's just not contextually full. The quote attributed to Brown, "I have 1,100 attorneys ready to sue somebody," was apparently said in response to his desire to make sure that climate change regulations were being carried out in different parts of the state of California. The ad says that he said 1,100 attorneys ready to sue over regulations, which sounds very different, right? I mean, you think about suing over regulations for business, like the stools in your bar are too low. You know, right. this is not that. This was a more – now, granted, it's still something controversial about his actions regarding AB 32, the climate change law. But the context, I think, is important. And context you don't get in political ads. Yeah,
that's why you're the public radio guy.
I know. Call me crazy. And the other thing, too, about the ad is that it is remarkably similar to an independent education advocacy issue ad. By the California Chamber of Commerce back in April.
That ran for about 11 seconds before.
Yeah, it didn't run long, and it got snagged on the chamber's
internal politics.
Internal chamber stuff there.
Yes.
But they were both cut by the same person, a veteran political consultant named Larry McCarthy. At least that's what Joel Fox at Small Business Action Committee tells me, and says it's coincidence that they are that similar. But they are so similar, they have the same morphing of the old Jerry Brown, new Jerry Brown, how am I going to say this? The morphing of the younger Jerry Brown to the older Jerry Brown. Same pictures, same stock footage in them, some of the same accusations, almost, you know, verbatim in the language. Joel says that business groups, all kinds of business groups, have the same issues with the Attorney General.
Minus points for originality if you're judging at home.
Yeah, and I have to confess, yes. I didn't realize this until I saw it during a commercial break of Access Hollywood.
Is that where you get your news?
No, in fairness, it was just left on the TV while we were eating dinner and taking care of the kids. But, you know, there it was. So I was.
So what is going on with Lindsay Lohan?
I wasn't watching closely enough.
We'll talk later.
That's a different podcast. You know, now we'll get a bunch of hits because you said Lindsay Lohan and people think like this
keyword.
Is a,
keyword.
Exactly. Keyword. We're in trouble now. Okay, so we'll keep watching that race and we keep coming back for the budget next week?
Yeah, or Lindsay Lohan updates.
Have you put money in the budget pool yet, by the way?
No, I don't gamble.
You don't gamble?
No. Oh, wait, okay. Tonight's poker night. Damn.
I will say this. I'm going on vacation the last week of August through Labor Day. So, by the way, there will not be a podcast. That would actually mean there won't be a podcast. No, there'll be one next week. Bear with me, folks. But there won't be a podcast the following week. I predict that's when the budget happens.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Things happen on my vacation.
There you go.
So look at it, folks. Away. August 28th to September 6th. If that's, mark it down.
If that's true, you're going to have to schedule an early July vacation next year.
That worked. It didn't work for you, did it?
No.
All right. That's Anthony York, the proprietor of the five-year-old Capital Weekly. Where can you find it online, Anthony?
CapitalWeekly.net. Capital with an O.
See? There's his plug. And I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.